This is At School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have one sponsor for the show, and that's our friends at Jamf Software, makers of Jamf Pro and Jamf Now, MDM solutions for Mac, iPad, iPhone, Apple TV, and they can really help you get your job done. So we'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, what's up?
Beautiful day here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We are approaching the beautiful fall weather, so it's my favorite time of year. It's been great. So as a recording, our favorite new iOS 11 software has come out. And, you know, and I was thinking this morning about my timeline for kind of pushing this upon people. And what I decided to do is our iPad that I use for credit card processing, okay, I'm going to go upgrade that. And the nice thing about APFS already being done is, like, I'm less worried about this on the iOS side, because that was already done. That's kind of like the hard part was last year in a way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it makes it's like this is some way we kind of split up the scary stuff. And
yeah, you remember I made a big push to try and get everything to 10.3 or later before 11 came out, just to get that APFS migration done. And then I mean, they're not all at 10.3.3, but they're at least all in APFS. So, yeah, that's a good point.
And so, yeah, I had everything, all but 36 of our devices on 10.3.3 as of this morning. And the other ones were on 10.3.2. So I upgraded that machine manually and went fine. Setup Assistant, basically, only thing it asked, it didn't ask anything. It was just basically explaining the dock and the new control center and things like that. So pretty seamless. So I will probably... you know, the kicker is, I'm sure 11.0.1 is going to be out any, you know, very, very soon. And so there's a part of me that just wants to wait and start pushing it on devices, particularly with the news that there is a cellular bug in iOS that affects the LTE Apple Watch. I don't know if you've heard about that. Basically, it involves where, like, if you have your Apple Watch LTE in LTE only mode, where it's like it's not connected to your phone, and you're say near Starbucks, and it will try to get on their Wi-Fi even though there's a captive web portal and it's not supposed to. And then, like, you basically it's like those periods with your iPhone when you're on Wi-Fi but yet you have no network connection. And so there's a bug with that. Looks like it was announced, kind of that news came out today. So that's always the gamble. I'm sure over the next 5 weeks we will see. I would bet we're on 11.0.2. in the next 5 weeks.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, yeah. There's definitely quite a lot of, not bugs as such, but just like cosmetic things still kind of hanging about that, you know, sometimes like you open a folder and one icon's not there, and then you close a folder and the icon appears again, you know, stuff like that. It's not really a problem, but it's just a wee bit glitchy in the corners.
The main issue I am still having is related to messages, where sometimes a group message is started and, like, I can tell it's a group message, but then, like, when I go to the messages, it only shows one person. But if I force quit the app and relaunch it, then it shows it right. And then I have an issue, and I've had this issue for, like, even on iOS 10, where if I sometimes use messages on the share sheet, it just fails to send, and it gives me the error, this message failed to send. And I don't really know why, and I can't really reproduce it. It's like, it's very sporadic, but it can be quite annoying. Yeah. But other than that, we'll see. I think the big hiccup for a lot of our listeners is going to be the lack of 32-bit support in iOS 11. But again, I mean, these apps weren't long for this world anyways, but it's still certainly inconvenient.
There was an almost decent piece in the BBC about that this week. I'll send you a link for show notes as well, in which a journalist tried to explain why Apple was doing this. And to be fair, the journalist did really quite a good job, but there was a couple of quotes from a computer science professor who basically said, oh, it wouldn't be too much work for Apple to support 32-bit as well. So clearly Apple are just trying to push their luck here or something like that. And it was kind of, it's like, yeah, really, you know, there was no kind of commentary about the fact that when you go 64-bit only, you don't have to run the 32-bit application stack as well to support a mixed set of 32 and 64-bit applications. Are you sure your device is under less memory pressure and so on? None of that detail made it in, but the fact that Apple was lazy was apparently the number one top of mind comment for a computer science professor.
Yeah, so we'll have more about this, I'm sure, in the coming weeks as we kind of get this rolled out and we see how this affects it. But our main topic for tonight is a pending network upgrade at Cedars. And so you and I have been talking offline quite a bit about possibly you guys rolling out Ubiquiti for your Wi-Fi and wired network management, correct?
Yeah, the full stack, basically. I mean, maybe Bradley, if I kind of give you the picture of what the network is like at the moment, that'll give you an idea of what has kind of brought us to this point of thinking anyway, if that's going to be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so basically what we have is we have the first Wi-Fi network we ever had was back in the early days when we first got this big building that we're in, and we were starting to kind of grow the school up into the size of that building, which took a couple of years. And, you know, as more people joined the school, we started bringing more classrooms into use, and we kind of I basically patched together a network out of Apple Airport Extremes, and those were fine. That actually worked surprisingly well. I mean, management was horrible, right? But we only had maybe 7 of them, so it wasn't the end of the world. And you were doing manual channel selection, and you were just manually making sure that all the SSIDs were the same and the passwords were the same and stuff like that. So it wasn't, and this was of course before our iPad deployment as well, so it wasn't at the same scale that we're doing things now. But we had that. So basically we had Ethernet running to almost all the classrooms. In fact, I would say actually apart from 2 rooms that are now in use that weren't in use before, every room has a wired connection to either a switch, an unmanaged switch on that floor, or a direct connection back to the master switch in the network cupboard. So we're reasonably well cabled in the walls, you know, over the course. We did a reasonable job of that as we expanded into different classrooms. But what was in that cupboard was something that has kind of been the thing that's been scaring me for a long time, and I'm sure I've referred to it in the past in the show, Bradley. But what we had in there was we had our cable modem from our internet provider, which is Virgin Media in the UK. And we're actually very fortunate there because we pay for a kind of standard business line. But because of where the school is, we're in a residential area, so we're the only business on that circuit, according to our account manager. So he just said, you know, you guys can just go for it during the day because nobody else is there to use it. So we basically get almost the full circuit to ourselves during the day, and then everybody comes home and does Netflix in the evening when we're gone. So that circuit's busy pretty much all day, and half the day is just our fault. So that's quite nice to have. But what we then had inside there was actually, this is the thing that sort of continues to exist as our NAT box and firewall, I suppose, and inbound port mapping box, and also our DHCP server is still one of those old Airport Extremes. I'm not even making this up. So in there, that's what kind of keeps brings the internet in and distributes it around.
And this is, and then, simply the 11N model, right? This isn't the new 11AC model.
No. The flat one, yeah. And I don't think even the second, I think it's probably still the first generation of that. I mean, it's not doing any Wi-Fi stuff anymore. It's purely doing Ethernet routing, but it survives to this day. And what I have discovered is that there's a bug in that firmware, which is not being updated anymore, of course, which only occurs on the order of every 2 years or so. Where I think what happens is that enough DHCP leases get given out, and that eventually some counter, some 64-bit counter, gets exhausted, and then you have to just power it off and on again, and it works for another 2 years. So that's how long that's been sitting there just doing that one job for us. And it's done an absolutely stellar job, you know, to be fair, for what it is and what we've paid for it over the years. It's no shame to it that it survived that long. The next thing we have in there is, the next original piece of hardware is a Netgear 24-port switch. Now, this is a kind of, it's a managed switch, and it does have things like VLAN capability and stuff that we've never really used. But it is the oldest thing on the network. It's actually even older than the airport that it's connected to. And that's the thing that has kind of made me worry in the middle of the night that one day I'm going to walk into school and that thing is just going to have died. And I'm going to have to, like, in 20 minutes find a replacement in a panic for it and so on. And that's the thing that's kind of been in the back of my mind. I've got to get that switch replaced with something a bit more up to date. And then basically wired into that switch all over the school is a bunch of Aerohive access points. We've got the AP330 model, which is now an obsolete model. It's no longer made by Aerohive. It's no longer getting firmware updates. And we also have an Aerohive BR200 in there as well, just to keep some stuff straight. But essentially what happened was that Aerohive very kindly, you know, gave us that hardware, and in return for kind of a bunch of case study material that we gave back to them. So we've kind of had that Wi-Fi hardware, I think, from, I want to say, maybe 6 or 7 years now. It's been a while. We got it kind of early in our iPad deployment, and it has done very well for us. But the problem is we've only got 9 of them. And because of the way the AeroHive licensing works, we don't really have like an official support contract with them. We've got a kind of informal support contract. So every so often that expires and I have to go begging to some of the AeroHive to get a re-up. And I kind of wanted to put that on a formal basis. Like, I want to know that my system is like fully supported over time, no matter whether or not account managers come and go at the company we're dealing with. So the AeroHive stuff has been great, you know, and we've gone from, you know, 20 laptops for students and 25 for teachers, let's say, up to a network that now runs, I think, 170 devices a day tend to connect to that network. So it's done really well for us, considering the number of access points we've got and the building that we're trying to do it in. Now, our building is a sort of 1870s old stone building, with on the ground floor and the first floor anyway, very, very thick stone walls on the internal walls as well as the external walls. So it's of that kind of old-fashioned construction where you've got, you know, I want to say maybe 1.5 feet of unknown material in between each room. So the Wi-Fi on the ground floor is in some ways difficult, in some ways easy, right? You know, as you know, Bradley, it's easy because that prevents the signal getting through to other rooms. But the problem is, as we brought additional floors on in the building, and now when the school is very busy, we're bringing in even more rooms that we didn't used to use as classrooms, it's getting even harder to cover that number of rooms with the same number of access points that we had 6 years ago. Do you see the problem? So what we were looking at was I'm trying to think exactly how many. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 classrooms that share an access point with another classroom. 6, actually, now that I think about it. And that's okay on the upper floors where the walls are thin and it's a modern conversion in the loft of the attic of the school. But on the ground floor, that's very difficult. So we've got some rooms that are starting to have quite dead spots, if you like. And I suppose the other thing that's happening, Bradley, is that people's expectations for Wi-Fi reliability are just going up and up and up. Because most people now have like really good Wi-Fi at home, even just from the box that their internet provider gives them. It's reasonably decent. It's reliable. Might not be the fastest, but it certainly, you know, gives it a consistent good signal for most of your house. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Is we've got rooms that aren't covered very well. We've got people's expectations are higher than they've ever been. And not obviously a lot of frustration as such, but just a general level of dissatisfaction where not everything is going as well as it could with the Wi-Fi. So we come to the situation where we want to replace some switch gear, some routing gear, and we want to get maybe more than double the number of access points that are running across the school. So enter Ubiquiti as an option, which I suppose many people come to Ubiquiti looking at the price directly first, and I can't deny that that's where I'm trying to double the number of access points. Low prices is quite attractive to me as well. So that's kind of my opening statement, Bradley, to kind of give you an idea of what the picture is and why we're looking at a Wi-Fi refresh at this point. I suppose the other thing to say also is that over the course of new leases, we're mostly running 802.11ac hardware now in terms of student computers and staff computers. So most staff have had 802.11ac for a long time in what Macs they have. A lot of staff are now on iPad Pro. The students are all on 9.7-inch iPad Pro as well, or iPad Mini 4, all of which supports 802.11ac, I think. So we're now in a position to actually get the benefit of an infrastructure upgrade as well in terms of that raw Wi-Fi speed as well. So that's me.
So in response to this, I came up with a list of questions to kind of not pressure Fraser's thinking, but just to make sure he's thinking through all of the things you know, he may or may not be getting with Ubiquiti. And to be fair, I've never used it. I've heard about it, but I've never used it. So I don't come with these knowing that Ubiquiti has a good answer or a bad answer. We have AeroHive here at the school, and I've had them since 2012. We were on a second refresh, and I've got, you know, close to 50 access points, and we've got a couple of campuses that I manage, and very, very, very satisfied with it, and it generally just works. I mean, we haven't had just an actual network outage in years and years and years, but we've certainly never had a Wi-Fi outage because unless you cut the LAN to it, it can't go down. So,
I mean, really, to be fair, I feel the same way about AirHive. It's not, I just feel that I've got to the point with the number of access points that I've got. I've done everything I can to wring more performance and more range out of all of these units and try to place them in the right places, but I'm just not able to cover with the number that we've got. And just because of the way we came to have AeroHive kit, it's quite tricky for me to like add on one new access point to this system that's not really on a very formal basis anyway with the licensing. Oh, and so
well,
on,
and so. Even so, it's time to upgrade those devices anyways. I mean, the 330 was a great device, but it's not 11AC. I mean, that was a great device back in 2013, 2012, but I mean, obviously technology has changed and there are just better access points on the market. There's a reason they don't make it anymore. So yeah, it's time for you. It's honestly time overall for you just to kind of refresh that entire network. We're on our second, we've been on our second AeroHive deployment for about a year now. We're on the 230s. And it's definitely time for you to do something. So I'm gonna run through these questions here. What you've mentioned in the past that you heavily use AeroHive's PPSK, which is called private pre-shared key. This is basically like a mid-range between pre-shared key that people use at home where there's one network passcode and 802.1x, which is heavy on enterprise type stuff.
Radius.
Does Ubiquiti have a PPSK like service, and if so, if not, what's your thoughts there?
The answer is, as far as I understand it, natively no. It does have support for Radius authentication, so we could, in principle, set up a Radius server in the school, and if we really, really wanted to have individual passwords, we could do that. I think there might be, looking at the most recent controller software, there might be a beta feature, I think, where they have a kind of Radius, an internal Radius implementation where you can put in usernames and passwords and authenticate to the network that way without having a separate server. I haven't looked into that in a lot of detail. So I'm kind of proceeding on the assumption that I won't be using pre-shared key or private pre-shared key in the next network deployment. And to be honest with you, Bradley, the PPSK stuff has been a bit of a blessing and a bit of a curse. And where it's been a blessing is, when a student leaves the school, you can cut them off from the network. Or when a staff member leaves the school, perhaps more to the point, you can cut them off the network. The downside to giving students a private pre-shared key is that they know the password to the Wi-Fi. And then what they can do is they can put that password into other devices as well. So that has been on and off a bit of an issue. Primarily, it's not really people being particularly malicious about it. But what I do with the student SSID in our current network is I say each private pre-shared key, each password is only good for one device. But what the problem that brings is sometimes the pupils will put it into their phone. Their phone will hook onto the network first because that's usually the first device they're using when they come to school in the morning. And then their iPad can't get on the network. And they come to me and go, "Mr. Spears, my iPad can't get on the Wi-Fi." I'm like, "Do you have a smartphone with you? Let me see it. Let me see the network." So from time to time, I wouldn't say everybody's doing that, but it tends to be the older kids. And it tends to be, they try it once or twice and then the inconvenience gets to them and they just toe the line after that. But if we were to actually move away from pre-shared key, that would in some ways solve that problem because the students wouldn't know the Wi-Fi password at all. Presumably what we'll do is we'll deliver it by a configuration profile to their devices. So that password will not be known to anybody really and truly. So, and because we're one-to-one and we're controlling, we own the devices that the students should put on the student network, we kind of have control before we get to the Wi-Fi authentication point as well. So it's a reasonable arrangement that we can have.
So next question, what's your warranty on the Ubiquiti products?
I want to see it's 1 year with the option to buy extended warranty. I think that's my recollection of it. Just so people know, I haven't seen these questions. That's why I'm so unprepared for a question.
And that's by design.
But I think the standard warranty is 1 year.
If you need on-site support, are there channel partners that could help you? If you were having an issue and wanted someone to come on site and help you?
Yeah, that's the one thing. When I looked at Ubiquiti and I put out a call to my networks, if you like, as to can anybody tell me a reason why, you know, why this school and this network should not be married? The one thing people said was that Ubiquiti support is not as strong as other vendors. So on-site support, basically no. There's nobody from Ubiquiti is going to come to my school and help me with that problem. So I'm, in a way, I'm kind of on my own with that. But given our kind of existing situation with AeroHive, we've kind of been on our own for a while anyway, and I've been doing it that way. There is a strong community around Ubiquiti. So when I, the MacAdmin Slack channel, for example, has been a good source of information there. And also just asking people on Twitter, people that follow me, I just put out and said, team, is there any reason why I shouldn't seriously consider Ubiquiti? And everybody who came back on both channels just said, we just love Ubiquiti. We put in 80 base stations. We put in 100 base stations. We put in whatever. And it's just running absolutely brilliantly for us. So I got just such a series of rousing recommendations for Ubiquiti that was what led me to kind of proceed and start to look at it more seriously. They have a great community forum as well, which has answered most of my sort of pre-sales questions for me, if you like. I'm actually also running Ubiquiti at home now. I picked up a couple of their AP AC light access points, which are kind of home specification access points, and I'm running that internally as well. So I've got a wee bit of experience administering it just on a small scale, and I've been pretty pleased with what I've been able to do with that too.
How much cheaper is it compared to other like enterprise wireless vendors?
Well, I can tell you the kind of quotes that we've been seeing, which is they're selling these access points, the AP-AC Pro, which is kind of the higher capacity device for schools and high density networks. We are looking at, I think, just over £575 for a 5-pack. So off the top of my head, you're looking at maybe 2.5 access points for the price of one from another vendor, something like that. On that kind of order.
Yeah.
It's not just $20 cheaper per access point. It's, you know, mm-hmm. twice as many access points or more.
Do you have any options for, I mean, one of the big trends now in wireless is dual 5 gigahertz, where you can disable a 2.4 gigahertz radio and software have like two dual 5 gigahertz radio, a dual 5 gigahertz radio on both radios. Are there any options for that with Ubiquiti?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is no. I think it's you've got one 5 gigahertz radio, one 2.4, and that's it.
I'm sure. Surely you can turn off the 2.4 if you needed to,
Oh yeah, you can power down either one, and I know that much. But I don't think you can repurpose one antenna for another frequency.
Okay, is it? There are like are multiple types of like wireless architectures. There's like cloud controller, which is like Cisco's Meraki is one of those where some of the features are dependent on the cloud. There's like a controller base, which is kind of your traditional Cisco type model. And then there's like AeroHive's like kind of cloud managed where everything's happening locally, but you just manage it from like a web interface. Which one does Ubiquiti more line up to?
Yeah, so my understanding is that Ubiquiti is basically on the AeroHive model where you need your controller to be operational in order to inspect or modify the access point's behavior, but if that controller turns off or crashes or something, then the performance of your network is not affected. So very much the same model as AeroHive, but there are different ways to deploy. I don't know if you've got a separate question about how is the controller deployed, but there are different ways to do that with Ubiquiti, some of which are quite interesting.
Yeah, I do have a question on that later. Are you getting the entire stack, like Wi-Fi, switch, and firewall, like replacing, going all in on Ubiquiti?
Yeah, that's the current plan. Is we're going to basically rip out everything that's there except the wires, and we're going to replace all with Ubiquiti kit. So we're going to start with replacing the airport with a Ubiquiti device called the Security Gateway, which is basically a two-port router that just sits between your network, your switch and your cable modem. So that'll be the first piece. And then we're going to replace our Netgear switch with a Ubiquiti 24-port PoE switch. And that's going to be our kind of backbone switch for what we do. And then on each of the two levels above, so that'll service all the ports on the ground floor because they're all wired directly back to the cabinet. So that'll service the whole ground floor with no difficulty and a couple of other rooms. And then we'll run essentially one trunk port to the first floor, one trunk port to the second floor. And on each of those two floors, there's going to be an 8-port Ubiquiti managed switch. So at the moment, we've got unmanaged switches in there just providing access. But we're going to replace them with 8-port managed switches. And that will mean that every access point is on PoE. We won't have any injectors hanging about, so it'll be a lot more, a lot neater of a deployment as well, with a lot less cabling and a lot less power bricks hanging about and stuff like that, some of which are quite kind of large and unsightly. So that's kind of the plan at the moment, is you've got a security gateway, big switch, two smaller switches on the two upper floors, and then PoE running out to all different areas of the school.
Before we move on, the next question, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. You guys know Jamf. Jamf Pro is our favorite mobile device management software. It's the best solution for deploying, managing, and securing your Apple deployment. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every day. They bring learning to a whole new level to your students, your faculty, by using Jamf in your classroom. They have zero-day support for iOS 11, and they will have zero-day support for macOS High Sierra as well. So learn more about Jamf and Jamf Pro at jamf.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. Okay, so next question. You mentioned like the controller, like the various, you know, it's more in line with Arrow House model, but you mentioned a controller. So explain that setup. Like how is that actually managed?
Yeah, so basically what you do is Ubiquiti provide a downloadable software-based controller, and it can run on Windows, it can run on Mac, it can run on Linux, and that's one way of doing it, is that you download the controller software and you host it yourself. What's quite attractive about this is that you're not paying any licensing fee for that software. That's basically a free download. You could, if you wanted to today, go and download that software from their website and set up a controller without having any hardware, just if you wanted to sort of explore the options and things that are available there, which actually I did before I got my home equipment. I had the controller set up and ready to go before any of it arrived. And I'll do the same for the school if we go down this road. You can also, I think they have a hosted version. I haven't really looked into that too much. But they also have this thing called a cloud key that you can buy. And this is essentially a small, almost a Raspberry Pi-like device. It's a network appliance that you plug into a port in your switch. It's powered by PoE, and it basically is a small computer that runs that software. So you can have your cloud key, and you put it on your network, and it discovers all your devices. And basically, it's an easy way to run that software. If you don't have sysadmin experience in your organization, you get a cloud key, it's like £100 or something, you plug it into your network, you sign up for a Ubiquiti account, and you're off and running. And that's probably the easiest way for most people to do it. The reason we're not going to do that is because we're looking at deploying 20 access points. And from my reading on the forums and different places and speaking to the reseller that we're talking to about this, the recommendation was that 20 access points is within but close to the upper limit of what the cloud key can support. So the cloud key is really there for, like, you know, a 5 access point deployment or something, like those kind of places where there's not a lot of IT experience in the organization. So we're going to skip the cloud key, and I'm probably going to host it on Amazon Web Services, as I'd like to do. But there's no need for a particularly large instance. Ubiquiti actually have documentation about setting up the controller on AWS. And they're talking about, I think, whatever's current, a T2 micro instance or something pretty small, which is effectively available for the free tier of AWS service if you're a new customer. So that's probably my approach, is we're going to throw that on AWS again. And just as we do with our GSS, you get a reserved instance, pay for that up front. It's going to cost me, $150 for 3 years, something like that, and just run it up in the cloud.
This is going to sound dumb, but how did the devices, like, if you had like the cloud key, but how it finds it because it's on the local network, but how do your access points get connected to that AWS controller?
Yeah, so that's what's called layered 3 adoption. So it's not discovering it on the network directly. You've got to SSH into the unit you're deploying and tell it where to find. There's a thing, there's a discovery tool you can get. I think it runs on iOS as well, where if you're on the same network, you can find it and you can say, hey, by the way, your adoption URL is this, and you would give the URL of your controller machine, and then it would provision itself that way. So it's not a zero-touch deployment. You can do that with Aerohive, for example. And I think to a certain extent you can do that with Ubiquiti as well if your controller's on the same LAN as the access points you're plugging in. But you can do it over at TCP/IP as well. You just need to provide a bit of information to the device before it will actually contact the controller, and then you can set up with a web interface after that.
What happens like if you lose internet connection and you lose those access points, lose connection to that controller? Does any traffic on site drop, or does like the network shut down? Like, how does that work?
My understanding is that your traffic will not be affected. Now, bear in mind, you know, people who are about to go and spend tens of thousands based on this podcast, right? Just check this for yourself, because I'm still learning as well. But my understanding is that the access points will continue to function, but you would not be able to change anything on them, obviously, because that comes through the controller. So it's similar to the Aerohive model, where if you lose connectivity to the Hive, then your access points will still pass traffic, but you can't change any configuration or anything like that. I think also the controller seems to handle some of the sort of deep packet inspection stuff in the statistics. I suspect you might find a break in your statistics at some point if it's down. I haven't properly tested that here. I suppose I could test that at home by just killing my controller for a while and see what happens. But I haven't tested that yet. So I think that's my understanding based on what I know about the architecture so far, is that the controller doesn't actually have to be running all the time. But I think the statistics might get interrupted. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, trying that at home with your kids would be tough. I mean, you need to really schedule a strong maintenance window there.
Yeah, yeah. After 10 o'clock, yeah. Wouldn't we? Yeah.
Do you have any concerns about, like, capacity of these access points? I mean, how many, what's the recommended number of clients per device?
Yeah, I think the APAC Lite is less than we would want in school, right? That the Lite is the cheapest model, and I think that's generally unsuitable for even one class size. But what I've read so far is that the APAC Pro, which is the one we're going to get, or the one we're speccing anyway, that one handles in the range of 30 to 40 units, which is about the same as what our Aerohive will handle at the moment. I suppose the other thing, Bradley, is because of the lower cost of these units, anywhere that I'm expecting a high density, I can put an additional access point in. So at the moment, I've got one access point between two rooms, but in one or two of the bigger rooms, I'm looking at possibly putting two access points in the one room, just in case that becomes an issue.
And we've talked in years past about your standardized testing setup, and I know this may have changed, mm-hmm. but I believe in years past you did some stuff with your Wi-Fi on this. Are you still doing that? And if so, how will that affect that?
We are still doing that, and we would still have to do that. But what I'm planning to do more of with this deployment is to look at VLANs more closely. And what I would probably do there is I would create a separate exam VLAN, which has the control that we needed to have. And basically what it was before was we needed to be able to print over AirPrint. So we needed to be able to send traffic to the AirPrint server and then from there to the printer. So we used to use a separate SSID for that with certain firewall rules around it. And I think we could probably achieve similar results with VLANing when it comes to that. So what you can do in the Ubiquiti controller is you can create multiple networks, some of which are just for VLANs. And this is something you only get if you're using the full stack, including the managed switches, is you can say, well, this SSID gets this VLAN, and then we can make sure the traffic only goes to the right places with some of those rules in there.
Do you have strong visibility amongst your users, the devices, and what apps they're using, and like what data they're using?
You do, as long as you're using the security gateway. So one of the things I learned when I was building my home Ubiquiti network was there are two products that Ubiquiti make. One is called the Edge Router Lite, and one is called the Security Gateway. And the difference basically is not technical. The difference is that the Security Gateway is managed in the same interface as the UniFi access points and the switches. So, whereas the Edge Router Lite is basically the same hardware, but you manage it with its own web interface, so you don't get the same information. So going with the UniFi line of products, which is the security gateway, the switches, and the access points, you get like a fully integrated dashboard where you can look at deep packet inspection statistics, throughput and latency on your network, how busy access points are, and so on. But that all seems to depend on the security gateway being able to do all of that stuff. So we would still have that deep packet inspection. And because we quite strictly control, I was a little concerned because under Aerohive, you use the private pre-shared key as a way to categorize traffic. So you can say, all right, I go into April Spears' user ID in Aerohive and I can look at all the traffic that came through her user ID. But because we're one-to-one and only one-to-one, I can actually use the individual device as the identifier for that because I know which iPad April's got and I can just look at the traffic from that device and I can use that as the identifier. I don't need to use the Wi-Fi authentication as that part. I can just use the individual device because I know there's a one-to-one correspondence between the device and the student, and she shouldn't be on, or no student should be on any other device than the one that we issued them at the start.
What about controlling app usage? Can you go and say, we don't want any Netflix traffic, or can we decategorize like Netflix down below, say, G Suite?
There is some quality of service stuff in the security gateway. I'm not sure. I haven't been into that in a lot of depth. What I do know is you can, if you have a student SSID and a staff SSID, you can actually put bandwidth limits per SSID. So I can just say, like, all students, no student gets to saturate the network, for example. So I could put like a 2 megabit per student cap on their traffic, for example, which might be a reasonable thing to do. You can do the same for guests as well. I don't know if you can control bandwidth at the application level. I'm not saying you can't, but I haven't really been deeply into that yet to see if it's possible.
Is there any way to bring the Wi-Fi down outside of actually taking like the local area network down?
I suppose if the switches were disrupted in some way, but that's still taking the local area network down. I don't know if these access points will mesh with each other. I don't think they do. You know how Aerohive access points can create a mesh if the backhaul fails. I think Ubiquiti make a line of mesh products, and some people are using that quite successfully, but I don't think that's a capability that's in these access points. And the question always with Ubiquiti, I think, Bradley, is like, how is it so cheap? You know, what's missing here? What's the problem with this? And I think what's missing, or what the problem is that the radio hardware inside the access points is relatively basic compared to some of the other access points on the market. And the software is relatively standardized. So it's not, it's like a web configuration interface to some fairly basic stuff. I mean, I'm saying basic and I don't mean it to be pejorative, but it's not, I don't know that they're building like a full operating system just for their access points. You know how you have Hive OS that runs on Aerohive devices? I don't know that there's Ubiquiti OS the same way. There might be. I might be oversimplifying the business model, but that seems to me the difference is that you can't go in and tweak like the nth degree the way you can with Aerohive. There's a number of settings, plenty to be going on with, but not every single parameter is tweakable in the same way that it is on Aerohive.
Yeah, that was my next question is, what is there anything outside of price that makes Ubiquiti like your choice? Like if all things were equal and the major players were there, and is there anything outside of price that you feel Ubiquiti does well?
Yeah, and I think the controller software seems good, and they also do a very good job of iOS applications as well. And this is something that is kind of... I'm not using the latest version of Hive Manager because of our licensing situation, but the version of Hive Manager I'm on is okay on iOS, or like on a Safari browser, but it's not amazing. And Ubiquiti have really nice iOS applications. You can't do absolutely everything in the iOS application. A lot of the setup stuff you would want to be on a browser to do. But look, in terms of like looking at traffic, looking at individual devices, checking to see if an access point's offline, a lot of that stuff you can do from your phone, and it's very, very nice to do. So not every single part of the controller, the web-based controller interface, is brilliantly designed. There's a couple of strange choices of terminology, and the way that you, for example, create a VLAN and create a trunk port in the VLAN is a little bit strange, but it's not insurmountable. It's just in some cases a matter of learning the new terminology for stuff, and no matter what vendor you change from and to, you're going to have a bit of that anyway, so that's inevitable, I guess. But for me, the controller stuff is quite nice, and also for me, you know, I understand quite a lot about Wi-Fi, but I'm not a Wi-Fi guru, right? I don't have certifications in Wi-Fi. And sometimes I find with Aerohive, if I go in and try and tweak something, like I said, I've been trying to wring performance out of this existing network they've got, that I'm never that clear on whether I'm making it better or making it worse. And perhaps maybe having less controls might be helpful for me.
Last question. Any worries?
Yeah, I'm worried about capacity. I'm worried about performance. I'm worried. I've looked into it as much as I can, and I've tried to find references to much larger sites than us, you know, and I've found them, right? There are people out there running 200 and 300 Ubiquiti access points without difficulty. So I think I always worry that we're like exceptional internet users or something, but you know, even just our numbers suggest that we're not ridiculously over the top. I mean, at the end of the day, we're on 150 megabit broadband connection. So how difficult can it be? I'm a little concerned about how can I describe it? What am I concerned about? Things like channel and power selection and RF. Bringing in more access points into the building is going to need, I think, a little more attention on access point placement, because basically what we were doing up to now is we were putting it as close as we could to the wall between the two classrooms that had to share the access point, and it was real obvious where to put those. But in a world where I'm going to have one access point per classroom, I'm not that sure that Ubiquiti does automatic channel selection in a sophisticated way as the Aerohive stuff does. So I'm probably going to be spending a good bit more time doing like manual channel selection on devices and things like that. So that's a concern as well. You know, can I avoid co-channel interference or adjacent channel interference or anything like that? That's something I'm a little bit concerned about, but I think that's just going to be a matter of tweaking in time. And I suppose the final thing I'm concerned about is how am I going to change this during the school year? Because that's, you know, the situation is that people are looking for an improvement in the Wi-Fi relatively soon. So I'm looking at, you know, where's my maintenance window to get all that done, to install 20 access points, install all new switch gear. You know, can I get that done over a weekend? Maybe. Not sure. I mean, we've got a lot of cabling. We're not doing a lot of extra wiring. So that's something in its favor. So, you know, those are some of my concerns. And also just, you know, what happens if something goes wrong and nobody else has seen it before. But I kind of feel with that question that the Ubiquiti community is sufficiently large that most problems somebody will have seen them by now anyway, so I'm not too concerned about that.
Well, that's always the fear with these big changes, isn't it? It's always, it's not like, I mean, because certainly if everything goes well, you could do this in a day, especially if you're not having to do a bunch of cabling. But it's like, let's say you hit like some sort of weird configuration issue where like just something's not working, and then Monday rolls around, yeah, and like you have nothing. And that is always the concern, yeah, with these like mass changes. And certainly summer would be the best time to do this, or even Christmas break. But I know that's a long way away. And if you're wanting to do something relatively soon, and really
I think there's a possibility that we can do it in a couple of stages. So I think we can pull it that because the security gateway has got its two ports to one output, to one WAN port. I can actually configure one of those ports to emulate the old network, and I can have one to emulate the new network. and I can actually put that in place and nothing else should change. Because as far as I can see, you know, all my airport is doing is providing DHCP in a certain range. And if I can make that happen with Security Gateway, I can start to bring that in. And then I can install the switches and I can get that going. And then I can start to maybe put an access point into a couple of places that where it's not, where we don't have Wi-Fi at the moment or we don't have good Wi-Fi at the moment. I'm thinking there's one or two classrooms where we've got Ethernet there, but there's no Wi-Fi access point on the end. I can put some access points in there and I can play with turning them on and turning the AeroHive stuff off and just making sure that behavior is what I expect it to be. And then we can start to say, well, okay, the, you know, the backbone access points, the ones that we really depend on, they can start to come out and we can start to put in other things as well. I don't think we can really run the two systems at once in any way. That's going to just be too messy from an RF point of view. But I think we can, there are ways in which we can sort of partially bring it up and check and then take it down again for the working day before we commit to every single access point changing over.
Well, that is all the questions I have. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think that's mostly what I know as well. I mean, these are the questions I've been asking myself in many ways. The other thing that I'm thinking about is how do I change from a deployment based on pre-shared keys to a deployment based on a shared but not disclosed password? And the way that I've thought about doing that and what I've actually done this already is I've created a Wi-Fi configuration profile. And because all our student devices are already up on Wi-Fi, I've set that profile out over the old network so that when the new network comes on, that password should be on all the devices anyway. Do you see what I mean? So I'm hoping that I won't actually have to touch the iPads in order to do this changeover. So the way I'm going to try and test that as well is I'm going to bring up a new SSID on our AeroHive equipment that doesn't use pre-shared key, and it's got the name of the new SSID, if you like, and just run that for a day and just check that nobody comes and complains. And then we'll hopefully that'll prove that the iPads will all switch over to the new SSID without too much difficulty. So this thing, that's my next concern, is like assuming the Wi-Fi works, and assuming the installation goes fine, do I have any other configuration issues for client devices? And the student ones, I think I can probably take care of them quite easily. Staff devices, that's still an open question, how I'm going to deal with that. We use pre-shared key for staff as well at the moment. But, you know, even you know, what I say it was like 6 years into having pre-shared key, teachers still come to me and they say, Fraser, what's the Wi-Fi password? And I'm like, there isn't a Wi-Fi password. There's 150 of them. Which one's yours? And they're still kind of like, what? That's not how it works at home. So in some ways, going back to a pre-shared key will be a lot easier in terms of it works the way teachers expect it to work. But I think what I'm going to do with that as well is I'm going to do that by configuration profile as well. And what I'll do there is I've tested this a couple of times. Like if I just keep the configuration profile like in my iCloud Drive and somebody says, hey, can I get my phone on the network? I can just airdrop that profile to them and they can install it right there and that will be them up on the network.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I won't even have to type in the password. So I think that might be the way to do it and maybe give a couple of other teachers access to that, put it on Google Drive or something, and then, you know, people can share it that way.
That's a good idea.
And of course in iOS 11 you might be able to just say, hey, put your phone next to my phone and do it that way as well.
Yeah, that is a new feature with iOS 11. So yeah, I didn't think about doing the airdropping the configuration file. Good idea. Well, we'll wrap it up there, and then as you work through this deployment, we'll obviously have a catch up show where we hear the results and see if your thinking was correct, and hopefully hear all the good news about how everything's working well. So we'll leave it there. This week, cool. Rate us on Apple Podcast, iTunes.com/out of school, and share the show with your friends. We certainly appreciate it. And thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show. I'm on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and you can follow my blog at chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I am Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.